Acts 20, verses 33 and 34, that's where we left off a couple weeks ago. We've had a little bit of a break as far as getting back and staying with the text. You may remember that Paul, as he's talking to these Ephesian elders, he said, "I did not covet any man's silver." The congregation there were some apparently members who had gold, and we talked about the value of clothing in the ancient world, and Paul said, "I did not desire any of those things." 34, "Ye yourselves know that these hands ministered unto my necessities and to them that were with me." I didn't get through everything, so I want to go back and look at a couple of things that we still need to look at. Paul was entitled to his work as a preacher. It would be nice if everybody could work for free. That's just not how the world works. Paul, as he dealt with the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 14, said preachers deserve to be paid for the work. Paul was willing to work outside of church work. He was not a lazy person. Some have suggested, and Jesus might have done this as well. Sometimes a person will say, "Well, you know what I've done," and they hold up their hands sometimes, or they hold out the item. And maybe Paul, as he talks about, he says, "You yourselves know that these hands," and maybe he held up his hands as a reminder. Maybe, sometimes people, depending on their work, they've got scarred hands, or maybe they've got very strong hands, or large hands because of all the muscles that they flexed over the years, and that could have been true for Paul. We do know that Paul oftentimes did not take money for preaching, and he did not do that on a number of occasions, because just like today, are there some people who are looking to fault something or fault somebody for something regardless of how blameworthy they try to live their lives? There are. I mean, they just don't like what you're doing, they don't like what you're saying, they don't like what you're teaching, they don't like what you're believing, so they're going to pick you apart to the best of their ability. Well, Paul was kind of a high-profile target in the first century. Certainly the Jews were not too enthused, and if you're going to target Paul, this famous preacher, what might be one of the charges that you lob against him? "You're just doing it for the money." I mean, the Jewish religion, that's been around for a long time. This Christianity stuff, this is fairly new. So you've come up with this new gig, so to speak, and you're a big wheel in the Christian faith, and you just hope that people are going to pay you big bucks. Well, Paul says, you can't make that charge against me, or if you do, it can't stick, because time and time again, 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 3, 2 Corinthians 7, 2, 2 Corinthians 12, 17, and 18, those are just three of the texts where Paul says, look, you are claiming that I'm preaching for money, and that is simply not true. I doubt that he got rich on his own. And then as you look at the text, was there something else that cut into his pocketbook? Look at 34 carefully. "Ye yourselves know that these hands ministered unto whose necessities? Unto my necessities." But it doesn't stop there. What else does he say? "And there were some people with me." Paul says, who paid the bill for the people who were with me? I did. Now, you ever take some relatives or friends on vacation? It can be expensive by the time you pay for the transportation. You're going to pay maybe for the airfare, and you're going to pay for the lodging, and you're going to pay for the food, and you're going to pay for the entrance fees to everything that you do. And that can add up for a family of two or five. But, you know, you bring along six or seven friends, and guess what? Your bill is now double, your bill is now triple, and chances are that your bank account's going to take a little bit of a hit for that. So Paul says, if you want to talk about my financial status, let's go back and review that information. Now, who did he take with him? I don't know. But there are some names that kind of spring to mind. You want to throw out a couple possibilities? Paul said, come with me, I'll pay your way. You help me out. Luke. Luke is the author of Acts, so he's with Paul. He's a physician. He's helpful in a number of ways, surely, to him. So I think Luke is probably getting some help there. Who else might have been? Two letters were written to him, younger guy, preacher. I think Timothy might have been with Paul, and Paul said, I'll take care of him as well. Erastus would be possibly another name that comes to mind, and there could have been some others as well. Now, here's something that you may have noticed and may not have seen, though, the significance of it. Paul, as he begins 33, he says, I did what concerning man's silver and gold and apparel? I did not covet it. Anybody have a different word than covet? Well, that's interesting. Now, this word translated covet, it's used several other times in the New Testament. You remember back there in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 28 where Jesus was talking about men looking at women, and what did he say in the heart? You lust. That is the same word that's translated covet back here in Acts chapter 20 and verse 33. And you find that word being used as well. Do you remember the story from Luke chapter 15 and verse 16? There is the dad who has the two sons. There's the older son who's willing to stay home. There is the younger son who wants to go into the far country. After the younger son goes into the far country, he's there for a while, and he gets hungry. You remember how hungry he was?
He
was willing to eat the pig food. And the Bible says, as far as that desire, what was it? He desired, or he lusted, not really lust in the sense that we think of it, but he coveted. And that is not, well, you know, I'd like a little snack. Sometimes, depending, I guess, on who you are and when you go to bed and how much you've eaten during the day, you might think, I'd like a little snack before bed. Now, maybe you want a healthy snack, or maybe you want a junk snack. You know, give me a Twinkie, or give me a fruit bar, or, you know, there's some jelly beans over there. But that's not what this fellow was experiencing. It was, I had this desperate desire for food. It's like I haven't eaten in 3 days. And this pig slop looks really, really good. Here's another place where it's used. Luke chapter 22 and verse 15. Do you remember Jesus, before he goes to the cross, there's the Passover meal. And what does he say to the apostles? He says, I have desired, remember that? I have desired to eat the Passover with you. I have this burning interest. I have this consuming desire. And then you have the word being used in some other places as well, and it does describe coveting. Romans 7, 7, Romans 13, and verse 9. When you think about a person who is coveting, and let's look at that in terms of, you can look at, for example, a lady. Maybe she's walked downtown and there's a dress in a department store window that she sees, and she covets that dress. Or maybe it's a guy, there's a new power tool that he's after. Or maybe it's a stamp collector, he's looking for a new stamp. When a person covets something, what's being described? All right, I think that would be part of the definition. This is something that is not yours, at least it doesn't belong to you yet. You really want it. What else? Yes, I think that's the other main part of the definition. Here is the person, if you're interested in that dress, you think you're going to go down to the department store once a day or once a year? If you had those two choices. It's going to be the once a day category. It's not going to be once a year. Well, it was there 365 days ago. I wonder if it's still there. No, you're thinking about that day in and day out. And Paul says, that is just not where my mind was focused. And that should be true for us as well. The other thing here that we want to make a point of is the word necessities. Paul says, and you may have a different word than verse 34, ye yourselves know that these hands have ministered unto my luxuries. No, he says my needs. Now, the health and wealth preacher will talk about, they're the necessities. Jeff, did you reach her?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, hopefully Holdeman's can. There is a fella, who was that? Ernest Angley, one of the health and wealth preachers right now. I just shook my head at this, because he said, I need a new private jet for COVID. I thought, wow.
So do I.
I can't travel with those sick people. I can't risk getting well. I thought, wow, you're the guy who claims to, you know, be able to heal people, right? You're the one that, if you truly were the servant of God, God should be out there protecting. But he was out there begging his followers. I'd have to go back and look at the name again. It was kind of a busy morning, but I did happen to see the headlines, skim the story, and send it for use at a little later time. But I thought, unbelievable. But it's one more way to illustrate the vast difference between what you find in the Bible, what's true, and what's not. Anything that you want to add or ask based on what we've talked about before we look at Acts 20:35? Okay, let's look at that 35th verse. I'm going to divide it into two parts, A and B. Let's start with A. In all things, I gave you an example, that so laboring ye ought to help the weak, and to remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he himself hath said. Now, Paul, as you go back to verse 34, we were there just a minute ago, he said, I have supported myself. That was the point that he made. And then as he moves forward, he says, I have given you what? I have given you an... Is the word example there? All right, okay, showed, or I've given you an example. Any other word? Okay, I've given you this example, or I have showed you in how many things? In everything. I've showed you in all things. Well, Paul, you were working, and somehow this is an example, and it's an example to tell you that you need to labor so you can do what? Support, or you need to aid the weak. One source in talking about the word example, and this is a good description of the original term, he said that the word means to show under, like tracing an image under thin paper. Perhaps you have had tracing paper in the past, or maybe when you were making letters in school way back when there was tracing paper, and this is how you make the A and the B and all the different letters and the numbers and so forth. Well, Paul's example certainly included a lot of different things, but here the focus is on helping the people who needed some assistance. Before we get to that, let's talk about the word labor. It's a word which means, and this is again a formal definition, the noun means a striking, a beating, and laborious toil or trouble. So as he's talking about his church work, he says it was not the easiest work in the world. There are some people, and it's easy to do this. There are some people who work oftentimes with their backs and their hands, and they say if you work with your head, you don't work. And there's some people who say if you don't work with your head, then if you're out there, you know, doing stuff with your back and your hands, you don't work. Well, you work with both areas. God set the body up that way. Some people can do better in one area than the other. We think about and covered this yesterday in Columbia City a little bit, John chapter 15, verses 2 through 7. Jesus talked about bearing fruit. That's an obligation that we have in the Christian life. And Jesus said in John 15, if you're not willing to bear that fruit, you're going to be just like the tree that's unwilling to bear fruit. What happens to the tree if it's not willing to bear fruit? It's chopped down. I mean, fruit trees are generally not all that attractive, at least compared to a lot of other trees. So, you know, you got the little apple tree out there that's kind of a mid-sized tree. Again, you can put in some much prettier trees if it's not producing apples. And that's what Jesus promises in John chapter 15. You will be lost if you're not willing to produce fruit. That's similar to, you may remember the story that Jesus gave about the one talent man. Let's think about him for just a second. Jesus says, multiple men receive talents. The last man in the story receives one talent. What's he do with his talent? All right, he buries it because he's scared. He's fearful. He thinks my master's going to come back, and if I don't have this talent, it's not going to go well. So he goes out, puts it in the ground, master comes back, and what sense do you get as far as when he comes back to his master, his demeanor is? He goes back to the master and you think he's, you know, shameful, and you think he's fearful, or you think he feels pretty good? Yeah, he's almost proud. You gave me one and I'm giving you one back. I didn't lose it, didn't destroy it. Well, how pleased is the master? He says, you are a wicked servant. And there's a second word. He says, you are also a slothful servant. What's slothful mean? You are a lazy servant. I mean, probably didn't have to dig much of a hole to hide it. And it certainly was not going to be difficult to just wait until the Lord came back. But we cannot always control the fruit that we produce, but we can be in the business of trying to produce fruit. And that is the obligation that we have. All right, another key word is the word weak. Now, if you didn't look at that word on your own, you might be able to, I think, guess the right definition for it. When Paul talks about this laboring, this working, this toiling to help the weak, who are the weak? Who are the people that we need to aid? All right, it could be the physically poor. They certainly would fall into that category. Would there possibly be some other people who would be classified as weak? All right, I think you have to include them as well. There's some people who, for whatever reason, they're struggling in the spiritual realm. Could you possibly come up with a third category? Well, that wasn't the category that I was thinking, but that's a really good answer. So we have three categories. Could we possibly come up with a fourth category? We've got the poor, and we've got the sick, and we've got the spiritual person who's struggling. Is there not a fourth category? Well, I was thinking more of a general answer. What about people in life who are just kind of down and out? I mean, they've got adequate money, and maybe spiritually they're doing okay. But are there people sometimes who say, I just need somebody to listen to me? I'm kind of discouraged, going through a bad period. I would also think that we could put weakness as far as a definition into that category as well. Well, here's the interesting thing. And I'll admit that I had not noticed this until I looked at the original text this week. And I was a little surprised on the one hand, but I guess I should have expected it on the other. Let's take a look at this again, 35a. In all things, I gave you an example that so laboring, what's your Bible say after that? All right, ought in some translations. Anybody have something else?
Must.
Oh, what translation is that?
New American Standard.
All right. Now, if I were reading from the New American Standard, must to me would probably be a greater cue than ought. Because when I hear someone say, you know, you ought to stay for a potluck today, what's that mean? All right, should. I mean, that's probably a good idea. If you don't come, maybe we're not going to have enough food. Who knows? But if somebody says, you must stay for the potluck, now does must sound different than ought?
Yes.
Yeah. There would seem to be a big difference. So when you see that word ought, it's kind of like, well, how ought is ought? You remember that little word that we've talked about, dei, D-E-I? That word back there in John chapter 4 and verse 24. When you worship God, what did Jesus say? You must. This is the triangle which has those three sides. You can't have a two-sided triangle. You can't have a one-sided triangle. If you have a triangle, it must have three sides. This is the word that Paul uses here. It's not you should help the poor. And I think it's very easy to sometimes look at life, especially in America, and think, well, you know, we should help the people who are weak. Well, all right, everybody agrees with that, right? But what if somebody stood up and preached, you must help the poor? You think there'd be some people in that assembly who heard that a sermon? And I'm not talking about here, I'm just talking about in general. You think there'd be some people that day who heard that and would say, I've just never heard that kind of teaching before? I think that would be a new message for some Christians. But Paul says, you must help the people who are weak. Let's go back to our four categories. What was one of those categories? We said it applies to the weak would be the?
Physically.
All right, the people who are physically weak. Do we have an obligation for them? Yes. Now, can we do everything? No. But can we do some things? Yes. So as we see people in life, and certainly that would be true for Christians who either have a handicap, or maybe it is advanced age, or maybe it is a disease, and they are weak in that sense, we should be cognizant of the fact that God says you have an obligation to do what you can to help those people. And maybe they can't fix food for themselves for a while. Or, you know, maybe they can't get out and get medicine, whatever that is. Help them. What was the second category?
Spiritual.
All right, what about the spiritual weak? Well, we already know that that's right. Remember Galatians chapter 6? Paul said, ye who are spiritual, do what? You restore, you help the one who needs assistance. So we're good on that. But that weak does include some more things. So we've got the physically weak, we've got the spiritually weak. What were the other two?
The ones that were downtrodden,
okay.
In need of support.
Yeah, we've got the people who are just generally kind of going through life. Can you imagine, I think, when you look at the secular workplace and you spend enough time in that environment, do you kind of have a general view of your coworkers? I think it's a general rule. You spend a year there, maybe not quite that long, or several years there. And what are some of the general things that you associate with coworkers when you meet them? I mean, day after day. If you're there 5 days a week, what are you expecting or what do you see from coworkers? Just average things.
You learn about their
family. All right. There's some people, you know, he's focused on his family, always talking about his kids, the school, you know, what his wife is doing, those kinds of things. All right, what else? What do you hear from coworkers? All right, there's somebody, well, I've got a ton of money. Well, why are you working then? You have to ask that question, I guess. But there are some other people, they would say, I'm struggling to pay my bills. Or the debt collector is calling me again. You know, if the phone rings and it's for me and it's a collection agency, tell them I'm not here. But you'll hear those kinds of things. What else?
I hear about their interest.
All right, you hear about their interests and so forth. We expect, yeah. And if we turn away from those things a little bit, what do you find as far as, let's just use the word demeanor. Are there some people who are typically down? I mean, it's just bad news, buddy. I mean, every time he speaks, well, you know, okay, well, I kind of expected that. And then there's some people, they never seem to have a bad day. Well, if you are in the always bad day category, you're probably not going to be too cheered up by the person who always seems to be happy. That's going to just need to be probably too extreme for you. But what I'm talking about here is the Christian has a generally good, positive, cheerful disposition. That person at work or the person in life who's going through some hard times and struggling some things, do you think that he or she might be a little more inclined, like the bug to the light? There's going to be a little bit of an attraction. You know, I want somebody who's going to be kind. I want somebody who's going to be compassionate. I want to find somebody who has perhaps a little spot of good news for me. I could use that right now. I think that the weak can do that. And I think that Christians, can position themselves in an excellent way to be the kind of people that those folks turn to. But you know, if we're pessimistic, Paul, chances are, how many people are going to come up and talk to us when they're having a rotten day? What? You're just going to make me feel worse. You're the last guy I want to talk to. So when we think about being a light to the world, we can relate that to the word weak. Anything that you want to add or ask before we look at the word help? Stan?
Well, James said that faith without works is dead. And if you look at what he was referring to or the context there, he's talking about those who would find people in that weak condition. And I use that in a general sense. And basically turn a cold shoulder to them. And he's told us not to do that.
That is exactly right. And that leads into what I want to talk about as far as this help. Now, the word help, again, it is an important word. It's got several words here in about 33 to 35 which deserve a little extra attention. And the word help means it describes a person facing a friend and helping him take up a load. So you imagine that you've got something like a big box or a big load of lumber. And hey, don't try to put that in your back. You can't carry that. But you grab one end. And I'm going to face you, and I'm also going to pick things up. Now, that's significant for what reason? Well, okay, we'll back up to you, and then we'll come back to where we were with Stan.
Going back to the different people, I think we as Christians need to be aware and be more engaged, I think, with our other fellow Christians, because there are some that, like you say, are downtrodden all the time. Some are upbeat all the time. But sometimes those upbeat people can be hiding behind a mask.
That's true.
And have problems that they just don't know how to deal with or don't want to share it that want certain people or something. But we have to be aware that there could be a mask. They're hiding behind other problems.
Yeah. And you not only find that, I think, in the church and in life, but you find that in the relationship of marriage as well. Sometimes a husband or wife will say, hey, you know, what's going on? You know, something just doesn't seem right. Something seems off. Generally, it's, you're not as positive, shall we say, as you are. But it could be the other way as well. You just seem a little too positive, or you're overcompensating here. But there does need to be that probing sometimes, because, you know, if we love and we love people and are concerned about people, then people will try to at different times hide things. And that can even be true for young people. Sometimes you get sometimes you get a big surprise. You know, you go up to a young person and say, well, how are things? And you're expecting them, hey, you know, just fine. Terrible. Well, okay. I've got a couple minutes. Let's just sit down and visit for a little bit. But you're right. You're exactly right. Tim?
That example that you said a minute ago, if somebody take the lumber thing, you got a stack of 10 or 15 2x4s, and you can't grab them all yourself, so you need some help with it. Well, if somebody grabs the other end of it, they're helping you at least two ways. They're helping you move this stuff, which you need help, but by doing that, they're letting you know that they care about you.
Exactly right.
And that letting you know that they care about you can lift your day. Just that little thing right there can make your day.
Yeah.
Because prior to that, you might have thought, you know, nobody wants to help me do anything. I got to do this all by myself. Just once, I wish somebody would help me do something. Here comes a neighbor. You know, well, holy cow, you got a big pile of stuff there. Let me help you get wherever you're going with that, you know. And then when they leave, you go, wow, I never knew that guy cared about me.
Yeah, we've had that here. People may not verbalize this, and people may not really focus on this, but I do believe that this goes through many minds. You have somebody down in the basement, or you have somebody out in the barn working. It's kind of like, boy, you know, that's a lot of tables to set up, or that's a lot of chairs to put back, or that's a big floor to sweep, or you could just, or a big floor to mop, whatever it might be. And, you know, you start in the project, and maybe you've got the heart of gold, and you're willing to do that. But all of a sudden, somebody else comes out the stairs, or somebody else enters into the barn and says, hey, you know, what can I do? How can I help? Where's another mop? Or where's another broom? Or I'll start on the chairs over here. Let me take care of those tables. And then a little more time passes, and then you've got three or four, and pretty soon you may have five or ten people down there. And all of a sudden, that project, which looked like it was going to take an hour, turns into about 10 minutes. For a time, and we got away from this, but for a time, we had the building cleaned on Wednesday nights. We had a process where we were going to take 10 or 15 minutes after class on Wednesday night, and we were going to try to clean the building. And we had people, I mean, just like bees, you know, some were vacuuming the pews, some were vacuuming the carpeting. We had some people grab a dust rag. And I think you see that same kind of thing there. People were encouraged. Rather than one or two people come and say, boy, this is a big building to clean. All right. Were we going to get every nook and cranny? No. But we did that, and that worked out reasonably well for us, I think, for a reasonable amount of time. But as Paul talks about this word help, it does go back to the point that you and Stan were just talking about, and I'm going to use lumber as the illustration. You're on one end of the 2x4s, I'm on the other end. And as Paul talks about this process, he makes two additional points. The voice of verbs can tell you if you're the one doing the acting, or someone is doing something to you, or in the lumber illustration, if you're involved and I'm involved. And here the voice of the verb is the last one. It would be like saying, you've got your end and I've got my end. And as we help people, that tells me that they have some responsibilities as well. It's not completely on me. If you don't want to accept my help, it's probably not going to end up in the way that I would hope and desire for you. But if you are, we can very possibly get that load lifted. And then going back to Stan's point for just a moment, it's also expressed with the present tense. So we can say, well, you know, I helped mop the floor, you know, 22 years ago. Well, good for you. But what's happened in the last 22 years? This is ongoing action. So as we think about the Christian life, it's one more dimension of living the Christian life. And I think it's a helpful dimension because we sort of all realize that, but I'm just not sure that we ever knew that it was taught in the Bible. But it is taught, and it's taught right here in Acts 20:35, as you start looking at some of these words. Anything else before we say a couple of the things? Okay, I want to move down a little bit more, and let's talk about this help. Based on what we've said, Paul says that you need to help people, and you need to do that as far as an ongoing activity. And this ongoing activity, it needs to be directed towards the weak. And that weak person could be someone who is financially poor. Right? Wasn't that one of our four? All right. What does that mean in terms of benevolence? There are some people, when it comes to benevolence, they have the idea that if someone comes up and they ask for help, you just start shelling out money from the church treasury or from your individual bank account. You just say, well, how much do you need? And, you know, here's the ATM machine. How would that square with what we have in Acts 20 verse 35? It does. And it falls short in a number of reasons. Why would that be problematic?
You're supposed to give it yourself first.
All right. There would be that. Anything else?
It says labor. So laboring, you want to support the weak.
Okay. Very good.
They must need that kind of help more than they need the money help.
That's true. Anything else? Well, let me toss this out for consideration. You remember back in Acts chapter 3, early in the book of Acts, way back when we were there, Peter and John, they're going to the temple. And they see this fellow who's ill. Do you remember anything about that sick guy? He was a lame man. And how long had he been lame?
A long time, but he was asking for alms, and they gave him something much better.
Very good. He had been lame from his mother's womb. So if there were a case where we would think, okay, you qualify for disability or you qualify for ongoing help, you obviously, based on that culture, could not work. So your task would be to be a beggar. And he was willing to do that. So he's out there begging. Peter and John, if they had loads of cash, like our Pentecostal preacher who's looking for a new multi-million dollar airplane, could they have given him money? Sure. But would that have perpetuated the problem? Yes. So what did they do? We will help you. We're not going to give you what you're asking, but we will. And you hit the nail on the head. We will do what? We will give you the means. We will give you something better so you can go out and you can begin doing what needs to be done. Remember 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 10, if any's not willing to work. Now Paul's talking about the church, but the principle is certainly universal. If you're not willing to work, then you should not eat. Jesus, Matthew chapter 7, when it comes to swine, and he wasn't talking about pigs there, he was talking about people, but if there are going to be people who are going to take good things and abuse them, then Jesus said, with your pearls, with your good resources, don't do what? you're just throwing it into the pig pen, and the pig's going to trample it underfoot. They're going to, in the case of people and benevolence, they're going to spend your money and basically spit on you. And Jesus says that is not a wise use of funds based on the principle from Matthew chapter 7. So as you think about benevolence, and going back to what we're talking about with Tim and the 2x4, here, as you bear in mind the point, remember I said it was a middle voice where Tim has a responsibility. You got to grab your end of the load, buddy, if you want my help. I, as the helper, have a responsibility to grab my end of the load. And together, what are we going to do? We're going to lift it up. So if you're coming for benevolent help, you might need some assistance, but you also have some obligations. And if you're just looking for a perpetual handout, I would argue that we not only lack authority to do that, I would affirm that we are even to the point of violating Scripture. Now, I don't think that's equivalent to rolling in an instrument, but still, if you want to get down to the nitty-gritty, if that's what the Bible teaches, help these people, but you don't throw the money away. But there's some congregations that do that, and I mean, that's their business. Every congregation is autonomous. But biblically, I would say that they are not making a smart choice. Teresa, we'll take you after Tim.
I think a lot of people have that attitude themselves. It's easier.
Yes. And we have some examples of that in the government. We'll just throw money at the problem versus actually trying to fix something. Now, sometimes there are duties or responsibilities, obligations that people have. You have to go out. If you're going to get unemployment, you got to go out and search for a job and maybe re-educate yourself. But there are also times where money is just waved in front of people, and it doesn't work. It doesn't help. Tim, to you.
We have a responsibility if we're the person on the needing end to be grateful for the help that we get.
Yes.
But it has to go farther than that, especially as being Christians. We need to take the help that we get and let that rub off on us so that we can reciprocate later on if somebody else
yes.
needs help.
That's true. Yeah. If you're ever in a congregation that either has men or an eldership that's willy-nilly with the money, that is, they just hand out funds to anybody who comes in, direct them back to Acts chapter 20 and verse 35, because this verse does deal with that, and it deals with that in the most explicit way. Let's also talk about the word alms in Acts 20, 35. In all things, I gave you an example, that so laboring ye ought to help the weak and to remember the words of the Lord Jesus. That's going to be, I think, in 35b, isn't it? No, I'm sorry. That's going to be... Let me get the word here. Oh, it's not in Acts chapter 20. Sorry about that. I kind of had to get back on track as far as my notes. In the New Testament, there was a word which is translated alms, A-L-M-S. Now, here's the interesting thing about that. If you were to look at the original word and you were to compare that with the word mercy, you'd be able to say, even if you couldn't read Greek, you'd be able to say, hey, these look pretty similar. And I find that to be an interesting point, because when you think about alms or helping people, it is in the realm of mercy or compassion. And you also find these alms and how they're merciful exemplified in some Bible stories. Do you remember the story about Dorcas back in Acts chapter 9, Acts chapter 9 and verse 36? The deeds or the alms that she did, again, it is that word which reflects our word mercy, God's word for mercy. And I think maybe that's one of the reasons why she seems to have been such a popular lady. There surely were some people who had received mercy from her. Can you imagine wintertime? You don't have a winter coat, and it's cold, and someone provides you a winter coat. Now, there are some people who are not thankful. Tim did a good job as far as bringing that point out a little bit ago. But if you are someone who has at least a little sense and is thankful, as that winter blast hits your jacket every day, what's going through your head? You were kind. You were thoughtful. You were merciful to me. You provided me something that I was not able to provide. Or flip the illustration around. Instead of the upper part of the body, what about the boots? Here's a person who has nothing but holy tennis shoes, and they're out walking in 3 inches of snow every day. And you provide them, you know, a $25 pair of boots from Walmart. You think they're going to be grateful? If they have any sense, yes, they should be. But it's not just there. What about Cornelius? Now, you might think, well, what was so special about that guy? Well, he was a very religious man. He obviously was not headed on the right path spiritually. But do you know that this word that we're talking about, alms, Acts chapter 10, verses 2 and 4 and 31, three times in that story about Cornelius, God says, you were merciful through your alms. Now, that tells me something in view of Acts chapter 20, verse 35. Is God concerned about our helping the weak? Oh, he is. And he's so concerned that when Cornelius did it, guess what? God says, I've paid attention to you. And not only have I paid attention to you, I'm going to let you have teaching from a very special preacher, Peter. You send some guys to his house, and you call him back, and he's going to help you out. When you start looking at this word, you find it in some other places as well. And one of those places is Matthew chapter 25, verses 34 through 40. You might say, well, Dorcas, he was 2,000 years ago, and Cornelius, he was way back there as well. How does that relate to me? Do you remember that judgment scene in Matthew chapter 25 where Jesus separates the sheep from the goats? We all want to be on the right hand versus the left because that's where the sheep are going to be. And the right group on the right side of the Lord will ask that question, Lord, when did we do all these things? And that word for alms or that word for mercy is going to be used. Jesus said, you were merciful to people, but especially to my people. So again, what we're talking about, to go back and use an illustration with Tim again, the Lord will say at the end of time, there were some people who had loads of 2x4s. Now, maybe to you it seemed like a small load, but there were some people who were on one end of that stack of wood, and they were waiting. They needed someone to get on the other side of that stack and say, I'll help you lift. And there are a lot of ways to do that. It might be the person who is discouraged and needs somebody to talk to for a little bit.